Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin.
In the wake of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting and a similar tragedy in a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado this past year, our nation's attention has, not surprisingly, turned to assessing how safe our public institutions are. In addition to school and movie theaters, we could add churches to that list. Although most people consider houses of worship to be a safe haven from the horrific events that often befall us, unfortunately, churches are sometimes the scene of such tragedies. Indeed, only a few days after the shooting of schoolchildren in Newtown, Connecticut, a woman who was decorating a church hall for the holidays in central Pennsylvania was gunned down. That incident was only one of several shootings that occurred in a church during the month of December. Perhaps such incidents are not that surprising. After all, churches do open their doors to individuals who are troubled, and one of the consequences is that church staff become more vulnerable to physical attack. But it is not only violence that should concern churches. Other crimes such as arson, vandalism, and theft often occur on sacred ground. How do clergy, church volunteers, and parishioners take responsibility for their own security? Are clergy adequately trained and prepared to be on the lookout for possible threats? Or might it be that in the light of highly publicized tragedies, a discussion of church security is simply an overreaction to these events? When I started to look into these issues, I was surprised to discover that there is a growing number of businesses that offer services designed to bolster church safety. Some of these services are offered through pre-existing private security firms, but there are a few specific consultants who specialize in the issue of church security. To find out what this is all about, I am pleased to have on the show Jim McGuffey, an independent security consultant at Ace Security Consultants, LLC, and someone who specializes in the issue of church security, maintaining a website dedicated to that topic. We will link to that site on our website, so please pay us a visit. Also, don't forget we are on Facebook, so stop by and become one of our friends. Jim, welcome to Research on Religion.
Thank you.
This is a fascinating topic for me because I don't know very much about the issues of church security or even this industry that is growing up around these issues. I want to start off, though, with a little bit about your background and how you got into this. If I could, did you have a religious upbringing?
Yes, I did. I grew up in the Church of the Nazarene, and in later life, my wife and I both have been members of the Catholic Church, non-denominational churches. We have about 16 years, 8 years with the Lutheran Church and 8 years with the Methodist Church. And we're now members of the Church of the Cross in Bluffton, South Carolina, which is the Episcopalian Church. And during the 8 years with the Lutheran Church, I served on the church council, vice president of church council, for a couple of years, and held other positions there. Starting the prison ministry, and on the Methodist Church, where we attended for 8 years, I was outreach chairperson, and also started the prison ministries there. So I guess I've had about, most of my life I've been involved in the church community, but I've had about 16 years in various leadership positions.
And it certainly sounds like you've run the gamut there, too, in terms of denominations. So you've seen a lot of different churches and how they react to a lot of different situations. And being on the leadership councils of several of these, you bring some good insight into this issue of church security and issues related to safety at churches.
I think the past experience experience, just being involved in the leadership positions, they add as much value to what I'm trying to do now with improving security within faith-based organizations as much as is the prior security training. I think you need a combination of both in order to be sensitive to the needs of the church community.
And I think that's where this niche market is growing up, people who do know the security stuff and people who do know the how a church operates, because churches operate different than your typical bakery, candlestick maker, or butcher shop of something like that. Did you have any jobs before you got into this church security, has security been your issue for?
Well, it's basically security, has been my background. I will say there are more people out there more knowledgeable on church security than myself. I'll just share, briefly my background and what led me into my involvement with church security. I've been involved in security for about 40 years now. I served 3 years in the military, 8 years in law enforcement, and I spent 26 years in the armored car business, 22 years with Brinks and 4 years with Loomis, and that's probably where I learned, a lot about security, protecting high-risk facilities and people. I served in the roles of branch manager, area general manager, district manager, and regional vice president for most of those 26 years. And during the past 5 years, I've been on my own as a security consultant. So that's kind of a brief background on.
Let me go ahead and ask you, during your time as a security consultant, or I should say, let me back up a little bit. Let me ask this. You served 3 years in the military, 8 years in the police, a number of years in the armored car business, and you were attending churches at this time. Sometimes you were on the leadership councils. Was there anything that occurred when you were with some of these churches that you said, whoa, some of these churches are just not that protected? Somebody needs to be looking out for these folks, and I could offer some advice.
I really can't say that anything jumped out at me. The one thing that's I would say that's always stood out for me, and I've traveled the world and attended churches in other parts of the world, and that is, no matter where I'm at, you're entering a church, and it strikes me that everybody's inside, and they're listening to the service, but I never notice anybody watching out, say, for the outside to see what's going on in some form or offering some form of protection. Mm-hmm. And that always kind of struck me is odd, but I never got involved with church security, to be quite frank, until about 4 or 5 years ago when I started my own business and I opened a website that you mentioned earlier, the mm-hmm. Ace Security Consultants, and I started thinking, reflecting back, and during that time period, I was asked by a couple of local churches if I would, when they knew my background, if I would help them, with security, just some basics, improving it, and I did, and that led to was actually the assistant bishop up in southeast Pennsylvania had contacted me and asked me if I would do a training session for about 40 of their various churches in that area, so. One Saturday, I set up 4 or 5 hours, and we brought everybody together, and I taught them how to do a security risk analysis, which I'll, talk more about later. And then I started thinking, what can I do to help churches improve security without incurring a lot of expense on my end, because I don't charge for what I do with churches. I consider myself to be in a position where I can offer help, and I don't need to charge for it. And I I'm thankful for all that God has done in my life, and I just want to show some appreciation and thankfulness for all that I've been blessed with. So anyway, I decided to open a website, just like my regular website that I use for paid work. Is a good method for people to, church leaders, or anybody that's interested in improving church security, to be able to access. And I did some research. I looked at some other websites out there, but I wanted my site to be somewhat unique in that I didn't want to try to get people in there, writing articles and that, where when they Google them, it takes you into the website. I didn't want to have like a fishing expedition where I'm trying to lure people in to get work for them. I just wanted that information there, no strings attached, where they can read it, print it out, and run with it, and do some basic steps to improve security. And it's work in progress. It's actually been up now for just maybe close to 3 years, 2.5 years. There's articles on there from other board-certified professionals such as myself, and I'm trying to expand it more, for international churches who have more incidents with bombings and, being attacked with people by machetes and stuff like that. Mine is basically at this point for U.S. Places of worship.
It is a really nicely designed website. Again, we'll point people to that website. So any clergy member or member of a congregation that is interested in this topic can go there. And it's a really wonderful starting point. You mentioned that you have board certification, and this will be one of the questions that people will ask when they Google or they link to your site and say, oh, okay, here's the church consultant site. What does this guy know? Why is he an expert on church security? What kind of training did you have to go through? You mentioned that you were in the military and as well as police and armored car business, but are there certain types of licenses? Are there certain types of training that help you to become an expert in this field?
Well, yes, there are. In overall security, I want to give credit to an organization called ASIS International. It's about 38,000 members dedicated to improving education and productivity for security professionals worldwide through educational programs and training. And it's made up of members from law enforcement, the military, and the private sector. And they're the ones that hold the board certifications for, and there's three of them. And the first one is called CPP, Certified Protection Professional. And that's a board certification that designates individuals who have demonstrated competency in all areas constituting security management. So it's a broad-based designation, and it's the most well-known board certification in the security industry. And that was the first one. When I went on my own about 5 years ago, I said, I've got the education, I've got the bachelor's, the master's degree, I've got all of this experience. I'm pretty well-rounded, but you know what? There's probably 100,000 or more, actually much more than that, many more than that, of people from the military, police departments, high-level ranking members, and also from the private sector out there that I'm competing with. So, what can separate me from these people, and also what can I benefit from in the process? And I said, I set a goal. I want to get one of these three board certifications every year. So I took 3 years, and the first one I earned was the Certified Protection Professional. And with those certifications, it's a combination of experience, education, and then you have to pass a board-certified test. You go to a testing center, just like attorneys or nurses, insurance agents go to, and you go to the same place, take this examination, and hopefully when you hit the button on the computer, in a few seconds it comes back that you passed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and then you have to take continuing education type credits every 3 years to keep maintain the certification. And the other two are the physical security professional, and that certification is for those people who are primarily responsible for conducting threat surveys, designing integrated security systems that include equipment, procedures, and people, are installing and operating and maintaining those systems. And the third one is professional certified investigator, which those holders of that, they've demonstrated experience or education in the fields of case management, evidence collection, and case presentation. So I earned one of those every year, and I have to say, I think those, the learning process, for me, I spent probably about 6 to 8 months a year with some intense studying on each one of those, and that really gave me a real solid knowledge base on security. So I have to give ASIS International credit for their educational programs. I've been a member since 1981, and most of what I know about security, I do attribute to that organization, and they're also a good resource for churches mm-hmm. to improve security.
Well, let's talk about that right now. You got the background, you have the experience here, the knowledge, and you've also been a congregant in churches and a leader in churches. So through all this experience, through all this knowledge that you've gathered, what are some of the main concerns when it comes to church security?
Well, I would say the number one concern is the lack of it. From what I've gathered, what I've seen out there, I would say, if I had to go from just my personal experience, I'd say 0% of churches have security, but I know that's not true, because obviously I've only been to a small percent of the churches. But from my peers out there, I'm being informed that probably only 15, maybe at the most 20% have any type of security program in place. And that's concerning, especially in today's age where you have the Internet. And, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, an incident happened. You know, people out in the, if it happened in California, people in the Midwest or somewhere may not have known about it unless they read it in the newspaper. But nowadays, you know, something happens, and it's out there. It's global. It's all over the world. So, you know, people are aware that crimes in churches, especially violent crimes, are on the rise. You know, there's a website, when I mention resources later out there, his name is Carl Chin, and he probably maintains the most up-to-date and accurate website for tracking church crimes. And when I looked on his website here the other day, he had 633 deadly force incidents since 1999 for U.S.-based churches.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those have, you know, have been over the last few years. There's just been a huge increase, and I don't have numbers for you broke down by years, but you know, it's a phenomenal increase, and again, it's, people are aware of this, church leaders are aware of this, so you know, there is a concern for lack of security.
That is something that intrigues me, because again, when I was thinking about this topic, it's one of those things you think about, says, that really shouldn't be that big of a problem. After all, they're houses of worship, they're sacred ground. People wouldn't be involved with committing crimes or anything. But then again, that oftentimes makes them the perfect place to commit a crime, that people are not aware, people are not expecting such things to be happening. Their guards are left down. And on top of this, the other thing is that pastors and people who run churches, the board of elders, they're usually not trained in this kind of thing. Pastors, they go to seminary to learn theology, not to learn church security or accounting measures or things that they need to run their everyday church. Is that part of the issue too, that just churches think that they're not vulnerable to this thing and they never really sat down to think about it and to educate themselves?
Well, you know, in my opinion, I think most pastors are simply doing what God has called them to do, you know, and that is to care for the poor, the sick, the needy, and to share the good news of salvation. And also I think that, you know, most believe that God will provide in all that is needed, to include the protection of their church members. Now, I believe the same thing, but I also believe that God provides in all things for those that love and obey Him, but I'm also a strong believer that God wants us to help ourselves and take the first step to protect our church parishioners. And the first step, you know, is to ensure that the place of worship is as safe and secure as possible, and this need not be expensive or burdensome tasks, which I think is another part of the problem, is that pastors, you know, have a perception that security is going to be costly and that it's going to be a burden for their members when they come into church, if they see cameras out there, if they have, some type of church security or safety team. You know, it's going to cause alarm. And I think those are part of the problems also.
Mm-hmm. That is a good point. And I, as I was thinking about this and just running through my head, you know, what could you do for church security? And you mentioned security cameras. You mentioned having a guard out there. There's two possible responses that a congregant could have walking to that church on a Sunday. You could say, oh, good, it seems like a safe place because there's security cameras and a guard here. That's one response. But the other response, and I think pastors might share this, is that people walk into a church and see the cameras and security guard and say, wait a minute, why is there a security camera and guards here? There must be a problem to begin with. And so it has that somewhat paradoxical feel to it.
You know, Tony, I think it's the latter is the bigger part of the problem. I'm working with a church now, and we just went through a security risk analysis, and part of the findings were to, you know, install an integrated security system, but to install components of an integrated security system, and one being access control and the other being CCTV cameras. And that was the question as we're working through this with the church leadership, is what are our members going to say when they walk into these facilities and they see the camera pointing down at them? You know, and that is a valid concern, but in my opinion, it can be overcome with a little with public relations, you know, getting out there and in advance and getting some literature and having some meetings and sharing the benefits, the positive benefits of a security program, because most people think, you know, jump on the security when there's been a church shooting, and right away, now they're interested, especially if the shooting happened, you know, a few blocks or a mile or so up the road, they want to have a security program. And I always say that, you know, this is the last reason you want to be jumping on a security program, because the chances that you're going to have a shooting are pretty slim when you look at the statistics, but the chances that you're going to be burglarized, the chances that you're going to be vandalized, the chances that you're going to have a theft, now those are pretty high. Mm-hmm. Those are the real issues that churches deal with. They deal with thefts, They deal with embezzlement. They deal with burglaries. They deal with vandalism. I mean, vandalism probably number one. And, you know, a basic security program could do a lot to prevent these things from happening. So, you know, and again, a basic security program need not be expensive or cumbersome to the membership.
You mentioned a number of different types of criminal activities, from, you know, as we mentioned, physical violence or shootings or something, which are very rare, to more common things such as theft, burglary, or vandalism. Are there certain problems that have become more problematic recently, or have these issues such as vandalism, theft, and even embezzlement, theft from the inside, have they been pretty consistent over time?
You know, I think that a lot of those crimes have been, I think the real jump and the most alarming one is the church shootings, but the other ones I think have been fairly consistent. You know, there wasn't a lot of tracking, and there still isn't, on those specific issues. But from my memory, you know, the vandalism and the theft and that have been consistent, and they've been quite a few cases of vandalism reported every year, and that's what you hear about. You know, with an embezzlement, you think of the, whenever I read something where, you know, $500,000 or $100,000 was stolen by a very trusted church member who had worked there for 20 years, and you start looking at the set of circumstances that led up to this embezzlement, it's always been something very simple, like the accounts receivables and the accounts payable handled by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And to not have basic security controls in place over a period of, say, 20 years or 10 years or 5 years, you're just inviting some type of embezzlement to take place or some type of theft or other crime. You know, because criminals and people who want to capitalize up on a system, they're always going to look for what they call the softest target, those places that don't have any controls in place. And the people who embezzle, you know, they probably have been trusted people for 5, 10, or 20 years. But as we know with theft, you know, at some point in their life, if they go through some problem and they have, you know, a lot of medical bills or other financial issues, they lost their, you know, job, a family member loses a job or something, and all of a sudden they're under some pressure now, and the opportunity is there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, those are the kind of things that can be prevented with a basic security program that doesn't have to cost a lot of money.
Let me ask, before we get into some of the ways that you advise churches and do a security check, are there certain types of churches that are more vulnerable to certain threats? Is this, do you notice differences between, say, urban versus rural churches or small versus big churches, the small church of maybe 50 to 70 members as compared to the big mega church where thousands of people come and go? And have you noticed any denominational differences? Are there certain denominations that are more susceptible to this than others?
I haven't noticed that. Say, let's take the rural church and the urban church, or the church in the inner city. Now, generally speaking, you know, if you're in the inner city and you've got a lot of gang activity and that sort of environment around you, you know, you're probably going to be exposed to more crime. However, you know, with the incidents involving, you know, the shootings or even vandalism, a lot of it can be brought on by, say, the church doctrine or the pastor themselves. In other words, if you have a pastor and you know, they're preaching, you know, God hates gays and they're burning the Quran, you know, publicly and insulting other faiths, you know, those kind of people are like a magnet. They're going to attract people to them that that want to do harm. And, you know, so that could be in a rural setting. So it's, you know, in order to start a security program, what I strongly recommend is to do a security risk assessment. And that's where you're looking at the total picture before you invest any money in cameras and other sorts of equipment and processes and systems. You know, that can be wasted resources unless you understand what your threats are. So, in my opinion, rural, urban, it can make a difference. But on the other hand, the church in the rural area could be much more susceptible to crime than an inner city church under certain conditions. And this is a these are the type of things that you explore when you do a security risk analysis.
Well, walk us through one of these security risk analysis. If I was, let's say, you know, I could take my own congregation as an example. We are a relatively large church that seats about 600, you know, let's say about 500 people every Sunday, and we are moving to two services. We meet in, we meet right now in a public high school auditorium, but let's just say that we met in a church building. We're in a town of about 6,000 people. Walk us through what you would do for a security risk assessment for some folks like us.
All right. And keep in mind, this would apply if you were a church of 50 or a church of 50,000.
Great.
The same process applies. And what I'm going to try to explain here in a few minutes, I could normally spend up to 5 days, depending on the audience, you know, we're in teaching them how to do a security risk analysis. When I did the training up in Michigan, I condensed it down to 5 hours. And so now I'm going to try to sum this up in a few minutes. But, you know, the first thing you want to do is you want to form, well, you want to try to find either a consultant that's experienced in this, and it doesn't have to be a consultant. It can be somebody within your church. A lot of churches have police officers, military, private security people who have some training in security. Because just because you're in law enforcement, just because you're in the military, it doesn't mean that you've had specific training in security. Like in a police department, you've got the crime prevention officer. So that would be a good resource. But anyway, you know, the first thing you want to do is form a safety and security focus. Now, this is a team that's made up of key department heads. These people are familiar with your day-to-day activities of the business and the property. And this team will work together with the lead security person to conduct a security risk analysis. Now, this team is not to be confused with the safety and security team, which should be formed later or at some point. But this is starting a program from ground up. So when you get your safety and security focus team in place, you want to have the person familiar with security to do a security on-site security survey. And what a security survey consists of is an on-site examination. It determines the existing security measures, if there are any, and also identifies vulnerabilities. And vulnerabilities are just any weaknesses within an operation or a security program. And what this does, the survey will help to determine the protection that's needed, and it's also helpful in recommending security measures to enhance the overall security. And after you do the security survey, and this is, you know, like myself and other security personnel, you know, you have a checkoff form, and again, that organization, ASIS, I know they have material on their website that they make available for churches for security surveys and that, which I'll tell you a little more about that later, but you go through and you check off. I start on the outside and work my way in on a survey. I put myself in the mind of a burglar,
okay,
a criminal,
mm-hmm,
and I'm saying, okay, I want to vandalize this place. I want to burglarize this place. I want to do harm to this place. So, you know, I'm going to case the church. I'm not just going to show up one night in the car, although many people do, and do the damage. I'm going to look around, and I'm going to study it, and I'm going to look for their weaknesses. I'm going to see if they leave doors open. I'm going to look at the lighting. I'm going to look at where they're located, because I'm going to pick a church that is in a rural area, that's not, you know, that's away from police protection. And I'm going to, I may set off a few false alarms. I may throw a rock through the window or something. I may look, see if they've got, I may visit it during the daytime, see if it's got an alarm system. I want to know as much about this church as I can, especially if I'm going inside and I want to try to steal money or computer equipment, or maybe they got priceless artwork hanging on their walls. You know, there's a lot of value in some of these churches. So you get a lot of criminals. They take their time in looking, taking advantage of looking the place over. So anyway, after I form the safety team, the survey's conducted, now I'm going to conduct a security risk analysis. And that's broken down into two components. First is the risk assessment component, and then the second is the risk management. So part A, the risk assessment, identifies threats and hazards that could impact your assets. Now, assets are people, property, information, and the reputation of an organization. And that's for all organizations, assets, whether it's churches or an industrial complex. And then we're going to look at the threats and the hazards that could impact these assets. We're going to look at the probability and the likelihood of the threats and hazards occurring and their impact upon people, property, information, and reputation of the church. And again, a few examples, you know, could be theft, vandalism, arson, assault, fire, severe weather events. And, you know, for those fire and arson, obviously the difference is the arson is deliberately set by somebody, and a fire could be accidental. It could be through an electrical storm, bad wiring within a church, carelessness. So, you know, we're going to do all of that, and then we're going to, the safety and the focus team is going to consider the assets that require protection. We're going to look at our assets. We're going to prioritize them. And when you're thinking about assets and in the subsequent harm from a threat, you want to consider the difficulty and the cost of replacing damaged or lost items and the harm and impact that a loss event could have upon the reputation of the church.
That's a really good point, and you mentioned that just about a minute ago, and I did want to ask you a little bit about this. This is something that we oftentimes don't think about. We think about an incident, a criminal incident having a very localized effect. Oh, the church was broken into, or the church was vandalized, or there was some physical assault there, and that happens on that day, and it's contained in that day, but it does have significant reputational effects. And for a church that does want to reach out into the community and say, hey, we are a safe haven, something like that can be rather devastating, I would assume.
You know, it can. You know, again, you take embezzlement, you take a sexual assault. You know, those sort of crimes can have an immense impact upon the reputation of a church, because, you know, parishioners rightfully ask, and as does the local community, you know, well, why didn't they have something in place? How could this person embezzle, you know, $100,000 right from under their nose? You know, how could one person left alone in a church working at 8 o'clock? Why would they have that so that this person was sexually assaulted with some deranged person who breaks in, you know, or comes through the church at 8 at night? Why weren't there two people there? Why weren't the doors locked? You know, it's always basic things that could have been in place that could have prevented these things, and the reputation to the church has been damaged, and it's, in some cases, they don't recover.
Are there certain types of vulnerabilities that are common to churches, say, relative to private businesses? I think about this because churches want to be an open place to the community, so obviously you leave the doors open all the time, and that might be problematic. Is that a common problem, or are there other common problems?
Well, you know, there are. With all organizations, you know, I find that churches, for example, the one thing they could do is put in a basic burglar and fire alarm system. I mean, the cost on those are pretty low comparison to the benefit. And, you know, if you think about, you know, what having a basic burglar alarm system could do, or what are some basic steps to prevent vandalism, because vandalism is one of the biggest crimes out there, one of the largest crimes that impacts churches. You know, the security lighting, you know, just having basic lighting outside of the church, and making sure your shrubbery is maintained so you don't have hiding places, so that when police do patrol or other, you know, concerned citizens that would be looking out for the church drive by, they got a clear shot of the church. You know, so there's just so many basic things that you could do to improve security that just don't cost a lot of money, such as maintaining shrubbery, making sure that your windows, that not only are they locked, but that they have the ability to lock, because sometimes you find that oftentimes in both churches and commercial-type businesses, they'll have doors and windows that aren't even properly equipped to lock or close, you know? And burglars are not stupid. Criminals are not stupid. They're going to always look for the softest target. And in many cases, they actually spend some time planning ahead for these things.
In terms of that as well, do you look at the, I guess, the logistics of the building? And I'm thinking now of, say, a physical attack, of a shooting or somebody coming in to do physical harm to individuals. Do you look at how the space is arranged and how individuals could possibly get out of this situation? The reason I bring this up is, again, I teach on a regular basis at a university, and I am very security conscious. I've been trained in martial arts and security and emergency prep, so I'm always thinking of that. And then every time I go into a new classroom, the first thing I do is I look around the room and I said, okay, if there's going to be any problems, and it sounds like I'm overreacting, but I say, hey, it only takes a minute or two. And I prepare myself, okay, if something happens, where are the doors, where, you know, what's obstacles in the way? Do you do any of that logistical stuff for churches?
Well, I think there's two parts to that question. One is referred to as crime prevention through environmental design, and that's taking advantage of the landscape and the architecture within the facility and outside the facility and capitalizing upon it for security protection. With that said, you know, the vast, probably all of them except for a handful that are being built every year, you know, you have to deal with existing it is what it is type things. In other words, the church is constructed so they're not going to move you know, hallways or doorways,
right?
And which would be ideal in the initial planning stages is to control your access points, because controlling access points is really a primary security, best security practice. And you can't do that in most cases, so you have to work with what there is. But, you know, being concerned about the environment and looking for exits, especially after you hear about all the, you know, the shootings, the Colorado shooting, and all the shootings that occur where you have, you know, some deranged person walking in with multiple assault weapons and shooting the place up, I would think more people now are thinking about those things, and I would think, you know, the church community should also think about those things. I know I always do when I go into a place. I, you know, I look around, look for the exits, and try to have a plan in place. I don't deal a lot with the active shooter. I haven't on my website yet. At some point, I will, when I get more time, I will address that, but I will tell you that the Department of Homeland Security has some good information that's free to the general public on you know, what to do in case of a shooting. And basically, just a very quick summary, it's broken down into three parts. You know, that if you're involved in a situation, the first thing you want to do is try to get out. So if you know your exit and you can get out, you want to do it. And then on the way out, weren't as many people coming in, you know, to stay out as you possibly can. And then the second step is, if that's not possible, you want to hide. If you're in an office, you don't want to go walking around the hallways. You close the door, lock the door, barricade yourself in, and stay quiet until you can call 911. And then the third is, if there's no other possible alternative, you have to be prepared to take out the assailant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's say better than going down with them. You want to take them out, and you know, and be prepared to attack him or her as ferociously as you can. So those are three basic steps. Again, I don't get into it on my website, but at some point I plan to have some information. But there are police departments out there that have stuff on their website, and also the Department of Homeland Security does a great job in making that information available.
And we'll point our listeners to some of those resources. I'll do a little bit of homework in the Homeland Security site and find some of these places, as well as the database by Mr. Chin that you had talked about before. One of the threats, so we were just talking here about external threats, a criminal coming in to burglarize, coming in to do damage or harm to an individual. So there's somebody from the outside coming in. But you also mentioned that threats come from inside, from embezzlement or from sexual assault. And I know that churches today, especially if you have a youth group, the youth ministers have to go through training. They have to get certain certifications that deals with the insurance liability of the church as well. But this must be an interesting challenge for a risk assessment, because you come in and you say, okay, let's look at the windows, the doors, where the lighting, the shrubs, all that are, and people say that's fine. But also you have security risks of the people in your church. That must start to touch a soft spot. Say, whoa, how are you assessing risk of somebody who's likely to be embezzling? That how do you manage that?
Well, I can tell you it is a problem. And when I do the security risk analysis and you get into that piece of it, one thing that, you know, often is found is that churches don't take that basic step that could prevent internal issues like assaults and embezzlement and thefts, and that is, they don't have a good background screening program in place. And I want to, if I can just have a couple minutes, I'd like to touch on that, because I think that's one of the most important steps you can have in security to prevent internal and sometimes even external activities, crimes from happening. So what I find is the churches that do have a background process in place, it's not a good one, and they don't have it for volunteers. For some reason, you know, people say, wow, this is a paid member of the church. We're going to do a background. I want to know if this person has ever stole. I want to know, you know, all the crimes they've committed. But for volunteers, hey, they're volunteers. You know, we're just going to bring them on board. Mm-hmm. And they don't do the same due diligence for volunteers, and yet these volunteers are entrusted with all the assets of a church. So the most important thing you can do to make sure that you have good people is to have some form of pre-employment screening in place. And depending on the position, you need more or less screening. For example, those positions entrusted with protecting children and fiduciary responsibilities, they're going to require, you know, more thorough screening. But whatever the program, the basic screening should consist of prior employment verification and a thorough interview. And in driving positions, you need to have a motor vehicle check, drug testing, in addition to the past employment. And positions of trust should require employment verification, reference checks, criminal background check, drug testing if permissible, credit checks, and a thorough interview. And of course, I want to point out the entire process should be in accordance with federal and state requirements. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's most often overlooked in the process is the interview, because everybody relies on the drug testing for drugs or the background check for criminal records. Well, the problem is with drug testing, a most popular drug of choice out there is cocaine. And that goes through your system very quickly in a day or two. So, you know, you could just stop using cocaine, come in and get tested, and you're going to pass. If you're relying on a criminal background check, that's not always going to, you know, when you look at these horrific crimes, these people that are out there killing.
Okay, we just had a little bit of a technical glitch right there as our guest phone sputtered out on us. That does happen. We were in the middle of talking about the importance of background checks. So, Jim, go ahead and pick it up from what you were talking about in terms of the importance of background checks.
Well, with background checks, they can really weed out a lot of the problem personnel that come into your system. And did I cover the part of, you know, churches and organizations are really good about, in most cases, they do some sort of due diligence for mm-hmm. paid members, but they do absolutely nothing for volunteers. Did I cover that?
You did. And we were leading up to this point where you say the interview or an interview becomes very critical. And again, this is a very interesting thing for volunteers, because one of the things that churches want to do is encourage volunteerism. And so you don't want to put up any barrier to entry, to use economic terms, to get people to come in and help, you know, either set up the chairs before the meetings or dealing with childcare. But, you know, if you say, oh, you got to go through an interview process, that could be somewhat intimidating for some people, and you might not encourage as many volunteers. So how do you deal with that?
Well, you have to look at the positions, and I'm not sure what part I got cut off at, but, you know, there are those positions where you have people entrusted with volunteers. They're entrusted with children. You know, they're entrusted with finances. They're entrusted with really all of the assets, people, property, information, reputation. And, you know, there need to be some background screening done on these people, just like there are on paid. If they're going to be entrusted with assets, you have to have some type of screening. You know, there's just no way around it. It's how you present it, you know, to the people that can cause a problem. I've never experienced a situation where there was a backlash on screening, and I can give you a good example. I was a volunteer for an organization that works with homeless people in several churches to provide shelter, and they'll go out and pick up, you know, those that don't have a place to stay in the winter when it gets so cold, and bring them in and house them. And the church would have volunteers to staff in these volunteer positions. And when I got involved, I was a volunteer, and then they asked me to be their security manager. And I looked at their program, and the leaders were very on top of it from a security perspective, and they wanted to do the background screening. And that did create some concerns with volunteers, because their response was, why are you running criminal checks and doing background screening on us when the people we're watching can have criminal records, and most of them do, and you don't know anything about it? Well, you know, the response is, in my opinion, is pretty simplistic. I'm a volunteer. My wife was a volunteer. And we would spend the night in these churches with other volunteers who we knew nothing about. They're not even church members. Many volunteers come from outside the church. And, you know, I'm not so much as concerned as did this person steal something when they were 20 years old if they're now 40. I'm concerned, do they have a recent pattern of violence? Because I don't want somebody, you know, that's going to be working with my wife or my old, you know, my son or granddaughter when they're old enough. I don't want somebody working with them if they've got a pattern of abuse and they've had arrests for assault and battery and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's about protecting the staff members, and it's about protecting the reputation. What happens if you don't do any type of due diligence and then something takes place and you have an embezzlement, you have some type of sexual assault, and people are asking, well, didn't you know this person, you know, had five charges of embezzlement in the past? Didn't you know that this person in the last 3 years has been arrested three times for assault and battery? And it's just basic common sense, you know, from where I see. And again, it's about the explanation that you give the volunteers, that it's really there to protect them. It's there to protect the reputation of the church or the organization that you're working with.
I think that's a very good point, too, is to explain to them that this is nothing necessarily antagonistic against them, but rather this is to protect them and to protect the church, the organization, from liability in these different circumstances. One of the things about the interview, and as you were talking about this, you say that churches oftentimes overlook interviews for volunteers, but I can imagine just some very simple questions can be very revealing, such as, you know, why do you want to be volunteering here at this homeless shelter? If people have a difficult time expressing that, you might have to start thinking, well, are there ulterior motives going on here?
Good point, Tony. And I do want to point out that on my website, I have a specific article. It's called Pre-Employment Screening for Houses of Worship. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just highlighting a few quick points again in the article is that, you know, I'm not saying people need to nitpick at somebody's past record. You know, some of the best and most trusting people in the world that I know, you know, have some type of criminal record. They've been in prison, you know, but now it's later in life. They've turned their life over to Christ, and they're very productive citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same breath, I'm more concerned about what has somebody been doing in the past 5 or 10 years, or whatever the state allows. Some mm-hmm. states, you know, allow you to go back 5, 10. But that's what I'm concerned about. If a person is now 40 or 50 years old, I don't care that they stole something when they're 20. You know, I want to know what they've done in the past few years. Do they have a history of theft? Have they been arrested for embezzlement?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have assault and batteries? You know, this is important. Recent history is the best indicator of future history.
And I think that's a very good point, too, for churches, because churches are places where troubled individuals do come to, you know, find solace, to turn their lives around. And those people may have had troubled times in the past, but, you know, again, come to Christ and really turn things around. They can be some of your best assets, because they've been there and they can talk to other troubled people and saying, hey, there's a way of doing that. So I think that's a really interesting thing to find out too in the interview process. Let me go ahead and finish up here and talk about your business in your industry, because this is, as I mentioned before, I was surprised to find a number of consultants specializing in church security. And as you mentioned also at the beginning of our podcast interview, there are very few churches that really look into the issues of security. So how do you, as somebody who sees this problem, who has something to offer, and again, you do this for churches free of charge and it's part of your mission, how do you get in contact with people? Have pastors come to you? Have you gone out and marketed your services anywhere, saying, I'm a security guy and you guys, I was just driving by your church and you got too many bushes up there and that could be a problem? How do you go about generating interest in your business?
Well, I don't really I don't market it. You know, I stay busy with other things, but I do take pride in the website and in helping where I can. So my website has over 100,000 hits on that. I'm fortunate to have a webmaster. He's actually out in California. He's a Christian. Randy Beck is his name, but he manages my website for me free of charge. He's also belongs to a church out there and is a Christian, and he does that sort of work, but he doesn't charge me to manage it. I'll write the articles and send them off and updates, and he takes care of all that. So the website is really how people find me. I get requests through LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn out there, and people see what I do. I mean, I've had requests from different parts of the world. Recently, I had one from an attorney in Nigeria, and he had concerns about his church, being attacked with people with machetes and having to deal with IEDs, improvised explosive devices. I didn't have any literature available. I did tell him that, you know, that's my plan in the future, is to make it more usable for international users who have a different set of problems.
Yeah, machetes and IEDs is not something that we experience too much in the United States.
Right.
But it is, as you mentioned, I mean, our security problems here in the United States compared to some other parts of the world, you know, Christians are some of the most persecuted individuals in the world. And, that's a big concern.
That's the other thing with my website, is I make it available to all faiths. I'm a Christian, but I don't insult other religions. I'm hoping that my website helps, Muslims and Jewish denominations and any faith-based organizations. There are those who just, are concerned about say Christian, but my thought is you don't lead others to Christ by, say, not offering a helping hand out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is a good place to lead off. We will point people to your website, people from here in the United States who are interested in church security, either if you're a clergy member or if you're just a congregant and you want to make your pastor aware of these services. Jim's site is an excellent one, so please do stop by our website. We'll have links to it there. And Jim, I want to thank you for being on Research on Religion.
And thank you, Professor Gill. I appreciate this opportunity to hopefully contribute in some way to improving security within faith-based organizations. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.